Hi, everyone. This is Dean Haglund through the offices of Rational Exuberance here in the heart of the historic core of downtown Los Angeles, in the middle of the Art Deco wonder that is the Eastern Columbia Building. This is your Chilpec Hollywood Hour, and I'm here with my co-host, Mr. Phil Larnest.
Actually, I'm coming at you from probably the Hilton in Atlanta because it's Labor Day weekend.
Did you just blow it again?
How did I blow it? Everyone knows we're at Dragon Con.
Oh, that's right.
Today, Labor Day.
Tis Labor Day.
Yeah, September 4th, 2011.
Hooray!
This is your Chilpec Hollywood Hour. I am your friend in podcasting, Phil Larnest.
You are.
And we have a special guest today.
Hooray! Yay. Here he is.
Here to talk all about the excitement that was the Labor Day telethon.
Oh, it was so good.
It's still going on.
Yes.
Technically.
Yes, it's so good. I'm sorry I had to pause the image so I could talk to you guys.
That's Mark Hirschhorn.
Mark Hirschhorn, the voice you know from episode... That other one we did.
We did an episode of his show.
Yeah, the Succotash show.
I like that's right. Every show you do becomes yours.
That's true. Although my voice was on your episode asking you a question during the screening of the movie.
Remember that?
With the hoist by my own petard.
Spoiler, what was the great gag you had? Spoiler King?
I don't even remember.
I remember what it was. Me neither. But it was like the...
Reminiscing about things that people haven't even heard.
Yeah.
You've heard, at the very least, you've heard us talk about Mark on this show.
And heard us reference his show, the Succotash show.
Absolutely.
Where he then interviewed us.
That's right.
See, it's gone full circle.
As it started, though, the first time was when Mark reviewed... the film The Truth Is Out There.
That's right.
That's right, and got on Huffington Post.
That's right.
How possibly did you do that?
I've been a blogger for Huffington Post since my book came out, my business book, I Hate People.
Oh, right. I have my copy right over there.
Came out a couple years ago.
Tell us about I Hate People.
It's a book I co-wrote with a friend of mine, John Lippman, and it's a business book about how to deal with kind of idiots and morons in the workplace.
Hey, you know what we need? To read that book.
Yeah. Oh, wait a minute. So that we can decide which one of us is the idiot and which one's the moron.
Exactly.
But we identify 10 archetypes of people that we interviewed hundreds of office workers.
Oh, yeah?
Corporate people.
Oh, right.
And by sort of looking at the people they complained about, we were able to figure out these 10 archetypes that drive people crazy in the workplace. Things like the switchblade. Who's kind of a typical backstabber takes your idea and uses it as their own.
At the meeting.
Or when you go out to lunch with them and they badmouth everyone in the office, you start getting the sneaking suspicion that when they're out with someone else from the office, you're the target.
Same as
people like that. And then we have sort of tips and tricks about how to counter what they do.
See, that's handy.
And
what
inspired this?
I Hate People is my sort of mantra, actually.
So we're glad you're here on the show.
I actually once wanted to write a memoir of my life that would be titled The Cynicism for All Things Human. That was going to be... Of course, I was 18 at the time.
Right.
I thought both a memoir and such deep cynicism, really neither of them are wanted by anyone, let alone me.
As an 18-year-old.
Yeah.
But in reality, it's not the people. It's their behavior. And
It's not that I hate people. It's that I'm much happier when they're not around.
That's right. That's right.
And behaving.
And actually, the book came out, we were going to do basically a general humor book.
Right.
And when our agent started pitching the book around, Little Brown said, we would be interested in this book if it were a business book. Because at the time, they said humor books aren't selling, but business books are doing really well. Now, this was in early 2008, before the bottom fell out of the economy.
Before there's no
and
business.
By the time we got done writing our book and getting it out there, they said, well, we'll see what happens.
Yeah.
And was that advice good? Did it end up being good?
You know what? It's done okay, and we're actually published now in 7 countries in their native languages.
Wow.
It turns out people hate people all over the world.
That's universal. Universal hatred.
Yeah. Is it in native language here?
It is.
And what language would that be?
Esperanto.
So the book on tape is narrated by Shatner. That's fantastic.
Wow.
Is there a book on tape version of it?
There is.
Did you read it?
I read it, and my co-author and I both read it.
Really?
On tape, yeah.
That's fun.
And yes, it is.
Is that
fun.
Hard to do?
It's a lot harder than you think about. I mean, yeah. I've been doing improv for 30 years, and you just go, oh, it's a performance, except it's a performance that just never ends. You're in the studio reading and reading.
Hello.
And reading. And you start to realize, you know what? I really wrote this passage to be read with your eyes
yes.
and not with your mouth. You
go, right.
This is really clumsy coming out of my mouth.
Yeah, yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah. I got a lot of debt on the teleprompter this week.
Oh,
doing that
yeah.
YouTube TV. Hey, and another DVD has just been put out.
I'm taking care of a lot of business right now here on this Labor Day.
Look at that.
I'm putting the labor into Labor Day.
That's right. You are the labor.
And
labor
when you, of course, say on set this week, you meant a couple weeks ago.
I meant it actually right up till the 30th. Thank you very much.
Oh, really?
Yes. I meant right up to the day I flew.
You mean right until flying to Atlanta, you've been doing this.
Yes.
So it went over a little bit.
It went way the hell over. I'll tell you all about it on another podcast.
Yes, absolutely. Mark, you said that it's done pretty well, but the question that I actually had for you was that advice from the agent about making it a workplace book.
Yes.
Do you feel that it paid off creatively, that advice? Did it make it a better book than what your general humor book was going to?
It definitely gave the book more weight, because we were really shooting to make a humor book, and when we decided we had to shift gears and make it a business book, we actually had to start interviewing people and doing research and having case histories and looking at studies that have been done about interruptions in the workplace and things like that, which is fortunate. My co-author is a journalist and has been doing this for years.
Right.
And I kept pushing him and going, well, why do we have to interview all these people? He says, well, we have to be able to, you know, sort of prove out where the information
right,
came
right.
from.
You know what, Dean and I had the same conversation again and again while making the documentary The Truth Is Out There. Dean would keep saying to me, you've got me. Why do you need to interview all these people?
I know all this shit.
Yeah. And I'm an improv. I can play all the parts.
That's right. My point to my co-author was, we can't use anybody's name. You know, we're interviewing people and they go, well, I'll tell you about my company, but you can't use my name. I'm still working there. So I said, well, since we can't use anyone's name, let's just make it up.
So it's like the workplace version of The Help. I can't wait for that movie.
That gonna be awesome.
Oh, Emma Stone.
We did have a producer approach us. They wanted to do a movie of not really sort of a combination fiction nonfiction treatment, sort of a pseudo documentary. And we said, it sounds very interesting. He says, if you guys have the money, I'm ready to make the movie.
Oh, my.
There's a movie that's never going to come out.
Exactly. Hey, you know how many movies can be made like that?
Oh, sure.
Hey, podcast listeners, if you have the money, I can make a movie for you.
Absolutely.
It's that easy.
Yeah, absolutely.
That guy's a one-man Kickstarter.
Now, I always thought this would be a funny thing, is to go on Kickstarter and start a campaign to start a publicly funded website for backing projects.
So basically, oh my God.
Use Kickstarter to start their own competition.
Exactly. Please send us money so we can hire web programmers to start a thing where we could get money to start
That's
projects.
Right.
So what do you, you started blogging then you did this book.
As a part of publicity. And it's funny because I've had friends say, hey, I'd love to get on Huffington Post. Who do I talk to? I said, I have no idea. It was all set up by the publicity people at Little Brown, and they got me and my partner vetted to be bloggers, and they gave it, here's your code, you just get in, you post your stuff, and then it shows up 24 hours, 48 hours later. Okay, cool. So I started doing, you know, stuff for our book, and never talked to a person. They never emailed. They would put the stuff up. There's no sort of check system. They never kicked anything back.
Really?
And
is this dark van outside your place.
There is.
But you mean there's no editorial board going, hey, we really want you to vlog about blank, or could you not write the thing about Ariana being a bitch or whatever? You can't, like...
I've never written something like that.
Right.
So, but the funny thing is, once we got past doing publicity for the book, I'll still occasionally put stuff up for the book, but now I did your movie review,
yes,
which was the first... It was the first review I did, and I said, I don't know if they're going to take it, and it went up.
I know, and everybody saw it, too. It was fantastic.
And then yours went up, and then I had two other people email me and go, hey, my movie's coming out. Will you review my movie? So, yeah, okay, sure. So
sure, why not?
I put a couple of movie reviews up.
Now you're getting screeners sent to you all the time.
Yeah, it's fantastic.
Look at that. That's how you get all your free movies.
We don't even get screeners sent to us.
I know. Remember we used to?
Well, that was when I was in distribution.
Oh, yeah, that's why.
Yeah, nobody really wants us to be talking about their movie. No, with good reason.
Most of the screeners I only get now are from the Writers Guild connection for when it's award season.
Award season,
you know, I still get those screeners, even though my Writers Guild card. Dues are in arrears. I'm in arrears now.
I think you call it FICOR, financial cores.
Well, the funny thing is, when you go into arrears, they really hit you hard because you no longer get the magazine every month. That's the difference between paying your dues
hurts.
And not paying your dues.
Really?
Yeah.
That magazine, the glossy magazine.
Oh, yeah, and I can't vote.
Oh, right. On specific things like what the next year's magazine will look like.
No, I mean, he means he can't vote at all.
No, at all. Yes, my citizenship has been revoked.
Yeah. Wow. So Writers Guild, more powerful than you think.
I didn't realize that.
That's right.
Power. Wow.
I actually have been reading some conspiracy theories that involve the Writers Guild strike. Some people out there about what the Writers Guild strike was really all about.
Really?
Tying it into these political conspiracies.
In Building 7.
And it's like, as if anybody wants
to get the writer.
Yeah, get the writers. That's going to work.
That's where your power is. That's hilarious.
So what then would you write about when was it a challenge to come up with what to write in these blogs? I mean, was it always about the book?
Well, it wasn't about the book. It was about workplace elements. It would be finding things in the news, like some guy who goes crazy and tears his office apart, or threatens his boss or whatever. And it's like getting to the heart of that. Maybe
somebody who buys up bad mortgages and gives them AAA ratings
somehow. That's really bad.
And then there's a lot of human resource people out there that have blogs, so we oftentimes reach out and have them do a guest blog. Which was great. And then it would direct back to their, there'd be a plug for their blog.
Look at that.
That sort of thing. So there's, the blog thing, it's sort of like the podcast community, and there's a lot of podcasters interviewing other podcasters.
Hello, look at where we are.
Hello. Here we are now.
I don't know. That's awesome.
Well, isn't that, though, look, we're far from the first in this. I mean, 24-hour news, I think, sort of introduced the cycle of it.
The snake eating its own tail.
Exactly. Because every show, it's, hey, the guy who's hosting the show right after me is my guest on this show.
What are you going to be talking about up next? Yeah, exactly. And then you don't even have to see the next show because he's already talked about it in the show before.
Exactly. And also, now... this whole thing about, we're not pundits. I'm the host of a news program.
That's right.
Right, but now you're a guest on another news program offering your opinion.
Making you a pundit.
That makes you a pundit all of a sudden. Punditry, the new occupation. So I want to hear all about Jerry Lewis and the telethon.
Well, it's going really well. I guess it's his last one.
Why is it his last one?
He's out, right, as the head of the...
I mean, I've never seen him actually. Every time I turn it on, he's not even there.
No, but
no, he's still...
He's out as the head of the Muscular Dystrophy Association. Yeah. He's out as the national chairman.
Yeah.
Did he step down? Was he pushed? He stumble?
No.
That's Dick Van Dyke.
I get all those comedians mixed up.
But I guess we'll never know. It's another conspiracy.
Really?
So who will take over? And will they go for... And why are we asking you?
I don't know.
But
I
you're
have no,
big in the comedy world. I would think that they are right now scouring the landscape
looking for
the comedian who's going to become the chairman of the fundraising... And also the host.
I would say who's the biggest American comic in France right now, and that will be whoever heads up Muscular Dystrophy.
Carrot Top is going
to be. There we go.
I can see Carrot Top doing the next 20 years. Think about it.
Carrot Top's
not a bad idea.
It actually makes a lot of sense.
It does. He's muscular, and his comedy gives me dystrophy.
Wow.
No, I'm sorry I said that.
Maybe it'll be like they'll try different people for a while. Now that Jerry's out, maybe they'll have rotate
just
people
like
through.
Before they
It seems to me, telethon, you need someone. Obviously, things are going wrong, and they're flying by the seat of their pants so much, so they need someone quick on his feet who does improv and all. also someone maybe recently with a lot of teleprompter work.
Hey.
Gene Haglund.
Hey, ladies. I can do that.
Oh,
when this is the sunshine.
You know, I don't know if you've ever said on the show because it's so offensive just to repeat what he did, but you have a great story.
Oh, really?
About Jerry Lewis.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, dude,
is there any way you can do it without it?
I don't know. He was up in Vancouver shooting, right?
Oh, okay.
And of course, I don't even know. I think it was just a commercial or something. It was something so minor. And of course, he lands at the airport with 20 bags of luggage.
Ugh.
And he's staying the weekend. He's not even there for like more than a week. 20 bags of freaking luggage.
Probably socks.
Yeah.
I'm guessing.
Yeah, a lot of socks. I don't know.
Well, you know the story that he only wears a pair of socks once.
What?
Yeah, and then they're given away to charity or something.
Wait a minute. Third criteria for the show, a bizarre sock fetish.
Yes,
oh, my
apparently.
Gosh. That's yes. hilarious. By the way, this yeah. is a weird tangent. I got a gift for you from a fan, no less. It came in the mail. Hey,
I can't wait to. For those who don't know what I'm referencing, Dean Haglund talks about this with a therapist, and the truth is out there. The fact that he has never worn white socks.
Oh, that's
he
right.
only wears
that's right.
colored socks.
Right. And so, at the our premiere at the London Festival, London Film Festival, where we showed The Truth Is Out There, we spoke about this. A fan said, well, I'm going to knit you a pair of socks. As you remember, do you remember Catherine saying that? And then she knitted you one as well, Phil. Look at your names on it.
Wow.
Those are hand-knitted socks.
These are hand-knitted socks. Mine, for those who can't see, are bright blue.
Well, they can't see, Dean. They just can't see. They can't see.
Well, you don't know.
You don't know. Maybe they can't.
They are very textured, for those who can't see. I would always be able to find these in my...
Isn't that lovely?
I think I should read the note, shouldn't
okay,
I?
Okay, yes.
I mean, it's a lovely note. Hey, guys, here they are. Because we'd been waiting. Some nice, cozy, warm, hand-knit socks just in time for the California summer.
Awesome.
I was going to ask you all sorts of podcasty discussion questions, too, because, of course, we do enjoy receiving the podcasty discussion questions at chillpackhollywood@yahoo.com. That's why we say it's your Chillpack Hollywood Hour, because we'll discuss whatever you
really.
Our legion of loyal and beloved listeners.
You guys are so giving.
We give. You know what we do once we're done giving? We give some more.
That's right. It just keeps on going. It's a cycle.
Apparently, though...
the letter continues.
Writing... I was going to ask you all sorts of podcasty discussion questions, too, but apparently that's what was keeping me from getting this letter written and package sent, so I'll save those for email. Anyway, I hope the socks are satisfactory.
Satisfactory? They're fantastic.
I would say that they are extremely satisfactory. And if they ever get holes... You can send them to the address on the back of the business cards, and I'll fix them for the cost of postage.
Wow.
So I don't understand. So we have to pay for the postage and give her the equivalent sum in postage.
No. To get them back?
I think.
I'm glad we have a business expert on here.
Oh, yes. Exactly.
Explain to me. What kind of – how does that work? I don't – looking forward to seeing you back in London soon. Meanwhile, I'll keep listening. Is it Katrine or Katrina?
Katrine, I think.
Oh, Katrine Sawyers. Yes, Katrine, absolutely. Yeah. Oh, well, thank you. These are lovely, lovely,
lovely.
Socks.
Those
I've got
real,
a wonderful pattern
nice.
On these.
And unlike Jerry Lewis, I'm going to wear these more than once.
That's
I am
nice.
Going to wear them more than once.
So Jerry Lewis has worn those once.
Yes, he already has, and he sent them. No way.
So,
what?
So again, maybe you can find a way to tell this Jerry Lewis story about the so he brought all this laundry.
Brought all the luggage. And so he's filming in Vancouver, right? And everybody's gathered around. It's just a shot on him. And then way down, like two or three blocks away out of camera range, he looks past all the crew and he sees some old lady crossing the street, like an old Asian lady.
Sure.
Goes, hey, lady! Hey, lady! Hey! Stop. And in the middle of the shoot, so everybody's like, what the hell? Lady! Like, just screaming. And finally, after like six or seven times, the little old lady sort of slowly turns and looks up the street to like what must be to her just a blur of a film crew and stuff. And then as he realizes she's looking at him, he goes, for no reason. And nobody laughed. That was the other thing. Everybody just standing looking at each other like,
wow.
time is money. We're trying to shoot this thing. And he, what? Like, wow. crazy.
Now, because you guys are in the heart and soul of Hollywood and whatnot, you probably talked about this on the show, but Jerry Lewis is the guy who invented the video tap.
The what?
The video tap. You know, when he was directing himself in a movie, he said, I want to be able to see the shot. So he came up with the whole system of being able to tap into the camera with video, and he had a little video monitor he would hold on his lap.
You're kidding.
No, and he's the guy who invented the whole video tap system.
Look at that guy. Did he patent that?
I don't know.
Get a piece of that action?
I don't know. But
isn't that funny? Just like Lyle Wagner owns all the
wagons.
All
those Star Wagons.
Star Wagons.
That's right.
It's always thinking.
Yeah.
Well, and wasn't Glenn Ford one of the Glens in Glen Sound?
No, that's right.
Absolutely.
I right. And Ida Lupino gave the patent up during World War II for shifting frequencies to stop code breakers.
Really?
Which is now used in all our cell phones.
No kidding.
Shifting of the frequency as your phone.
That was Ida Lupino?
I know. Ida Lupino.
How did that even come up? What was she using that for in her
in her daily life?
She apparently was a brainiac and had an engineering lab in her basement of her Hollywood home, but didn't want to tell anybody because then they thought she wouldn't be an ingenue anymore if they knew she was brilliant in electronics and engineering.
I've never heard this.
Is that not? Yeah, and she was playing chopsticks with her friend, and then as they were playing the chords and going on the same keys, it dawned on her, hey, these are frequencies that are shifting. If we could shift those frequencies, the enemy could never know what frequency to tune into as it shifts around.
Wow.
I know. Think of that. And that's 1940s technology. And then as part of the war effort, she gave the patent to the U.S. government, and they still have it to this day. Uh-huh. Meaning every time you use your phone, the government gets a piece of it.
I've really learned something here on my Chill Pack Hollywood Hour.
Is that part of L.A. Confidential Tours?
It should be. I don't get to Ida Lupino's house to show the workshop, but it's often some of the glamorous Hollywood history I lay out when I give one of my downtown tours.
Now, I hate to take time away from Mark, and yet I'm going to do exactly that.
Thanks for coming. We're going to chat amongst ourselves.
I just did the thing that I hate the most. Like the person who says, I don't mean to interrupt, but whereas, in fact, that's exactly what you meant. I'm not saying it's not a worthwhile interruption, but that is exactly what you mean to be doing. LA Confidential Tours, you never really plug. Is there a website for such a thing?
There's a website that's down at the moment, so I'm building it back up because it got hacked.
How can people reach out to you about?
You know what? Just shoot me an email at dean@deanhagelin.com. Say, hey, I'm going to be in L.A. I'd like to do one of your tours. And then if enough emails gather, then we all find a date that everybody's happy with. And I come and show you around in a walking tour, a one-hour walking tour of downtown Los Angeles. The Hollywood history and the vaudeville history all still there.
John Giroudo, who was at our U.S. premiere in San Jose, had actually been on your first L.A. Confidential tour. I just found this out. I didn't even know
that.
You
didn't know? Oh, yeah. He was a lovely guy, and we went around and took the pictures, and he was fascinating to learn so much because he had lived in L.A., but when you live in Hollywood, you know, you come here, you go to Hollywood, you hang out at the bars.
That's right.
But you don't really know who else hung out at that bar. You don't know what other actors have gone before you, other than you see a few, you know, sidewalks of things by the Chinese Theater.
But now you can.
And, you know, I just found out that almost after every movie finished, Humphrey Bogart sat at the counter at the Pantry, the 24-hour restaurant just up on 9th there. That was his thing. He didn't even go to the rap parties and stuff.
Now, is it true that the Pantry used to just hire ex-cons?
That's true.
Is that true?
They not just... It would be a place for ex-cons to come and work, and they would get job training, and that was one of the things that the original owner was very adamant about.
So that was great, because if his career had fallen on hard time after Star Trek II, Ricardo Montalban could, as an ex-con...
Oh, my God.
Wow. 700 miles to nowhere. We are now in the desert.
I don't think we can get back from here.
I've got nothing, obviously. The U.S. premiere, though, is where we got together, where I first actually met Mark face-to-face rather than Facebook-to-Facebook. And he interviewed us for a fledgling podcast of his own at that point.
That's right.
I think you'd had maybe two official shows or one official show.
Yeah, I think you guys were at the show too, I believe.
Wow.
But I'd been fortunate enough to hear some beta testing
shows. Right. Yes, I did a couple of test shows.
Why? We never...
We should have beta tested.
Actually, we did, though, because we podcast for a few months just putting it up on, I think, your website before we were picked up by a network that will remain nameless because we're not with them anymore.
We moved on.
But then we count our official start date as the first show on the network.
Yes.
But, of course, we did do 3 months of shows
that really
rained. You know, some were 4 minutes long, some were.
And then the Oscar party was 9 hours.
Oh, my God. Yeah, we did a live
nice
thing.
Live blog Oscar.
Oscar, not blog.
It wasn't even blog. It was just that bullshit in the, during the show. Right. It was just like, oh.
But yeah, so you guys got in range when you had the San Jose big showing for the U.S. premiere. So you were kind enough to be interviewed for Succotash.
Right.
The comedy podcast.
That's now sweeping the airwaves.
Oh, sweeping.
How many shows have you done now?
Eight.
And that is
this being Labor Day, maybe 10. 9 or 10.
Yeah,
maybe.
Yes, that's right. Labor Day, this will be the 10th one.
It's a weekly show. And for our fans who are now going to rush over to the Succotash show, where do they find it?
Succotashshow.com. Uh-huh. Or, of course, iTunes, where everything is.
Yeah.
And actually, this week, I think you'll be lucky enough that I'll have a return by Dana Carvey as my in studio guest.
It was very funny. Mark and I actually talked about this, about kind of not what happened to Dana Carvey, but sort of what happened to Dana Carvey in the sense of, you know, so extraordinarily gifted and funny and interesting. Yeah. And it seemed like things were on an upward trajectory. And then he kind of disconnected a little bit, unplugged by choice. And so it was so fun to hear him on the show. And when Paul McCartney called in...
Yes. Yeah, we had a call from Paul McCartney.
Succotash. That was extraordinary.
Wait, when Paul McCartney called...
While Dana was on,
Yeah, hilarious.
Even though for some reason... I mean, we have no live feed from a phone into the podcast, and yet he was able to get through.
That's
former Beatles, though, they know what's going on.
They've got
technology that goes beyond Ida Lupino.
Oh, yes, they do. Yes, they do.
See that?
They've got Ringo Starr technology.
That's that kind of look.
What he was inventing in his basement. Led to rehab.
That's right. So wait, back to the telethon. What were you doing on the telethon?
I was not on the telethon.
No.
How did I get on the telethon?
I don't know. I thought you had all this inside stories about the telethon.
I don't know
that had nothing to do with the fact, other than we're pre-recording the show and pretending it's Labor Day.
Whoops. I thought specifically you had Jerry Lewis stories.
No, I had nothing.
Oh, you probably have a Jerry Lewis story. Come on.
You know Jerry Lewis.
I don't know Jerry Lewis.
You know everyone. You know someone who knows Jerry Lewis.
I do. I know a lot of comics that know Jerry Lewis, but they don't have any stories either.
What about the guy who tried to do the Jerry Lewis Humanitarian Award in London at the Palladium and then got his ass handed to him financially because Jerry Lewis faked a heart attack?
Oh, that's right. And you know who was there?
Who?
Rick Overton.
That's right.
Yes.
And all these comics going up before, because it's the first annual Jerry Lewis Humanitarian Award. It's going to be given to Jerry Lewis.
And then Jerry has a heart attack.
He has a heart attack backstage.
Yes.
The promoter has to come out and go, Jerry Lewis has just had a heart attack. And then apparently he just got in the ambulance, went back to his hotel.
And left.
Just got on the plane. Going, you know what?
It was one of those easy heart attacks.
The gentle
heart attack.
You can still get to the airport.
Absolutely.
Yeah. I forget who that guy was, but I know he did a one-man show about that whole story. And from how he met Jerry Lewis all the way to to the whole end of that sort of decibel. And I think he's out 60,000 pounds. I mean, that it's not cheap to rent the Palladium.
No, it wouldn't be.
And I don't think the audience came because it was comics making fun of Jerry Lewis.
Yes.
Going, well, who the hell is this old guy? And it was British comics. Yeah. And then it was people who were Jerry Lewis fans.
Right.
Hated the comics. So everybody was pissed off across the board.
It was a doomed show.
I don't want you. I see panic in Mark's face as he realizes we're halfway through his Chill Pack Hollywood Hour. Don't worry. We have every plan and intention to have Jerry Lewis on the show to talk about Succotash.
Okay, good.
So don't worry. Now, Succotash is weekly.
It's a couple times a month. Between my schedule and my producer's schedule, we get in the studio maybe twice a month.
So it's like season two of Moonlighting. You kind of just turn on your TV and you hope maybe if you wait long enough there will be an episode.
Yeah, and at the end of the first season we'll put out a DVD and you can just watch it all in a marathon.
That's awesome.
It'll do you shoot what you video? What
no,
your show?
We should. No, you don't. You know, we should, but we haven't started yet. We don't have that kind of technology.
People always have, or at least for the first couple years, would talk about how, oh, you guys, are you ever going to do it as a video podcast? Are you ever going to do this? And we were like, no. I mean, the whole point is it's fun to listen.
I think so, yeah, too.
And it's also disconcerting when we both walk up and do other things.
Exactly.
That
it really
be,
destroys
that would be
the
very
magic.
Weird to see this happening on
it really
video.
Destroys. It is always fun when we have a guest
he's like,
on who has been a fan of the show. Because the first few minutes, there's always some sort of perplexed look on their face where it doesn't match up to what they imagined.
Well, the fact you guys aren't even in the same room is weird.
Yeah.
That's the weird thing.
Me in the smoking jacket and the pipe without pants does live up to the
end. Yeah, I was ready for that.
But me in the plexiglass chamber hyperbolic.
No, that's a little weird. With the dollar bills flying around you. I thought that was just for radio stations.
I swear I'm
going to
get one of these fuckers one of these days. They're going to catch one and things are going to be good.
So what was the origin? What was the inspiration behind Succotash?
Well, part of it was, as I mentioned on my show when I had you guys on, is you guys really got me started listening to podcasts. I was really the first one I started to download and would listen to on my hikes. In the morning, and then I started listening to a few other comedy podcasts, and I said, I would like to do a comedy podcast. I've been in comedy for 30 years.
You know comedy.
I know a lot of comics.
You
know
do you
comics.
Believe it? Do you, I just need to, Dean, do you have a good sense of when people are telling you the truth? Do you believe what he just told us?
Yes, I do.
Really? Because I don't think he hikes.
Bastard. No, up in Marin County.
But then I spent a while trying to figure out what should my podcast be about, because it seemed like a lot of ground had been covered. And then I realized nobody has done a podcast about comedy podcasts.
And so there's a lot of them out there.
There are tons. I mean, hundreds of them. And some of them are really good, and some of them are really bad.
Because comics are notorious for being well-organized and getting a podcast.
Well, the problem is, not the problem, but the challenge is a lot of comedy podcasts are not done by comics. They're done by people who think they're funny.
Oh, right? Yeah. It's the old water cooler problem.
And so iTunes has put them under a canopy of comedy to classify them as something.
Right. I suppose this must be, there must be kidding.
You know that you've just invented a new podcast. Someone's going to use that title, Canopy of Comedy.
Yes, I like it.
I like it too.
Especially if it's an appetizer. Canopy of comedy.
They're delicious. I can't get enough.
Ida Lupino's Laboratory is also a great name for a podcast, I got to tell you.
That is awesome.
I do like that.
The other thing that I'd like to throw in that I think makes Succotash useful is also, as with your show, it's not necessarily where everyone does a weekly show like Chilpak Hollywood
Hour. Yes.
And it's kind of cool that you know, oh, okay, Mark Pitta has another show up.
Yes.
Right.
Yeah.
You know, rather than constantly going back to the website and
having to look.
A lot of the comics are on the road. They don't have time to do this all the time.
And even if you subscribe via iTunes, I have found that is something that you need to refresh every so often. It isn't always reliable that they're going to direct deliver the same, the show.
Yeah, it'll kick off and you'll click on it. It'll go, do you want it? You haven't been listening to these. For some reason, when you download it to your iPod and listen to it, it doesn't count that you're listening to it. If you're not listening to it through iTunes, they assume that
you're not listening to it.
And it goes, do you want to keep subscribing?
Yeah.
Right.
Well, yeah, I've been downloading these things for 3 years now. What do you think? Of course I do.
So that's another really valuable
tip
service. But it is the talk soup of
At the moment, it's more the talk of it than talk soup. Because I one of the things I don't want to do is some of these podcasters are out in the middle of nowhere, in the middle of the country doing these things, and they're trying really hard.
Right.
So I don't really want to slam some of these shows that aren't that great. And most of the time, they're not that great because the sound quality isn't very good. They're recording they're recording like a little hand microphone into like a recorder, and it just doesn't sound. It's tinny, and it's like...
Oh, right. As opposed to our mixer board with our $6 microphones.
This is a good setup. This is great. You guys sound good. So I've come up with this.
Your pitch went three octaves higher. No, it's really good.
It's really good.
But no, it's okay, good. Because since it'll be tinny, that'll compress the...
Yeah, the mixer will take care of that.
And we'll slow you down so it sounds like...
So at the moment, I'm doing sort of an Edgar Bergen, Charlie McCarthy version of Talk Soup, and then I'm always saying nice things about the podcast.
Right.
And I have my producer, who also is my other voices on the show. He's Bill Haywatt, our announcer. He's Kenny Durgis, our assistant sound editor.
I see.
And so he's the one who comes in and he'll badmouth a show.
Ah, very clever.
Based on some technical element or something.
Very clever.
Yeah, and I'm always, hey, come on, take it easy. These guys are doing the best they can.
And that's if you ever go back to the clubs, you can show your face, not get your ass.
Isn't it? I would think, though, with all these podcasts out there, that it would be possible to do the show, do a Succotash episode that simply shows that you actually like.
Oh, sure. Absolutely.
So is there a concerted effort to have a couple that aren't good? So that, because, you know, we hate dealing strictly in the positive.
Sure.
You're right, if anything.
No, there's often at least a couple of podcasts that are, they're either on there as curiosity factors or just this is so bad you won't believe it sort of things. But I let the audience discover that themselves rather than say, my judgment says this is a terrible podcast. Well, that's not necessarily so. I played one the last episode, which is, now that I've listened to it four times, it's actually kind of entertaining, but it's these two guys from Belfast, Ireland, who their brogue is so thick you cannot understand what they're saying. if you're a Yank.
You know.
And so when I first put the clip on, I go, oh, this will be funny because no one understands it. Now I understand it. I go, hey, this is actually pretty good.
They actually have something to say because now your ear is tuned to the English. I know. That happens when I go over to London. Like the first day, it's like, what the hell is everybody saying?
Yeah, if I wasn't a huge Python fan when I was like in junior high and high school, I would never understand what any of that was.
Because they
about.
Also did all the accents, too. They would get all your Cockneys and Liverpool accents in that show. That was so handy. Yeah. So when you go over there. Awesome. So, okay, I'm going to say, what's then your favorite comedy podcast you're listening to right now? Not that you're naming favorites, but what's the one that you are, other than, of course, our show?
Well, we don't really even consider our show.
And we talked about
comedy,
that before.
Yeah.
I mean, you guys are, sorry.
We laugh.
You guys make funny observations. You're funny just as yourselves, but you're not a comedy podcast per se.
Because we're not talking about stand-ups. We're not talking about life on the road. Yeah. We're not doing that sort of thing.
I'm sort of amazed by the watching the evolution that Marc Maron has gone through in the 2 years he's been doing his podcast.
Hello.
Because it started out just sort of, it seemed like kind of a lark for him. And then he became a better and better interviewer as his podcast went on. So he's really getting to what's behind comedy, which is really cool. I mean, he has people on, like, you know, interview with Jonathan Winters, and you guys probably have heard all the brouhaha from when he had Dane Cook on.
Yes.
And
Robin Williams talking all his addictions and stuff like
talking
that.
About all that stuff. So to me, that's fascinating. That's interesting to listen to.
And now he's on Terrestrial, because I just heard him on NPR. He's going
to
be...
Well, they've bumped some of his stuff to NPR. They've had to edit it to make it up and stuff.
Right.
So that's one I listen to on a regular basis.
Right. That's WTF with Marc Maron.
Yeah. And then there's some real performance-oriented ones. Paul F. Tompkins has the Pod F. Tomcast, and it's always like a production, and you can tell it's in a theater in front of an audience, and there's sketches, and they're wearing costumes, even though on the podcast you can't tell.
Oh, that's awesome.
The Prairie Home Companion podcast.
Yeah.
He's got a big deal, because he's always in a suit, and when he does stand-up, he's always very eloquent, articulate, and his tweets are very funny. My favorite one is, hey, I'm on flight 227, seat 4B. Come by and say hi.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah. I always thought that most of the people with the podcast would enjoy having a clip show to help publicize the fact they're on
the road.
And yet I just got a tweet from Doug Benson, who does Doug Loves Movies, which is a podcast I enjoy. He has a lot of guests on. They cap on movies all the time.
Yeah.
And he asked to have his clip taken off the show because he says that his stuff doesn't translate to short form.
Ah. Really?
Wow.
Podcast is long.
It's, you know, for whatever reason. Fine. hey, you don't want the free publicity? As I said when I clipped his show off the latest episode and put it back up on iTunes, I said, hey, this is one less podcast I have to listen to. So be it, you know.
So I'm curious then, how do you get the clips from our bon mots? Because often we are so hilarious that there's no single one-liners other than Phil's bad jokes that you can.
Wow.
Hello.
Sometimes it's difficult in a conversational show to find
a
3-minute, 4-minute, 5-minute clip
that can hold its own.
Yeah,
that makes sense.
So it makes it tricky, but you can usually.
That's why that anniversary show that we've been promising for months only just got done, because
it's hard to find clips
connect conversational threads.
So, right.
So sometimes it shortchanges the essence of the show a little bit that I'm doing a clip from.
Right.
But I figure, hey, it's a teaser. If you really like this, go ahead and download the whole thing.
Right. I had an interesting experience apropos of this. You know, sometimes every week, or at least every other week, I'm a cultural correspondent for Southside Broadcasting in the UK. On
that sounds
terrestrial radio, and then it can be downloaded. I think there's a way to stream it live at Siren Online or something from the States, but
Mr. Handsome Hollywood guy from the
So anyway, they'll call me just cell phone wherever I am, so it's great. And during the bottom of the hour break, and where they're usually playing a song or something like that, and the host always patches me into the feed for a few seconds so I can hear what's on the air. And so you hear this?
Yeah.
And then if I can hear it, then everything's good.
Good to go.
So when they come out of that, I'll be able to hear the other people in studio and all of this sort of stuff. Okay, great. Well, I'm usually expecting some song. This one particular week, I hear Sean Penn's voice.
Oh,
can you hear this? And it's Sean Penn pontificating about something. And I kind of roll my eyes, you know, just to no one in particular, going, oh, God, yeah, I can hear it. You know, and like, what the hell is Sean Penn going off about now, right?
Yeah.
And so I go, I can hear it. And so the host says, okay, well, we'll be back with you in just a moment when this clip is done. And so I'm forced to listen to the rest of
Sean Penn's clip.
And it takes about 30 more seconds before I realize it's not Sean Penn. It's in fact me. And it's a clip from your Chill Pack Hollywood. Yeah.
You pontificating on a big ass like Sean.
No, it ends up being really funny, but
that's fantastic. Yeah.
So you sound like Sean Penn?
I don't know. I was a bit gravelly. It was a bit,
And what were you pontificating about?
No, it ended up being funny. It was about the story about the Beverly Hills Police Department blowing up that aspiring screenwriter's laptop.
That laptop.
Yeah.
That funny.
So anyway, and it tied in very well with what they wanted to be talking about in terms of the role of police and this in the wake of, you know, the UK riots and all of this.
So they're listening to our show to get clips to then have lead-ins for you, basically.
No, I think that they invited me in part to be this cultural correspondent because, look, they're only human. They love their Chill Pack Hollywood
Hour. Of course.
That's right.
Of course.
We made it their Chill Pack Hollywood Hour. That's how it works. Hilarious. They're only human.
That's funny.
Awesome. So then what do you plan for the future, the Succotash Show? More of the same?
For the time being. Just trying to see, you know, who else is out there, who's, you know, people are always coming online with new ones. Sometimes I'll find some of these podcasts that it turns out, you know, they haven't broadcast anything since, you know, 2009. they did like 11 episodes and then got tired of it.
You know, that's the joy of having two people on a thing, because the moment, if it's just by yourself and you're talking, it gets a little boring. So to have it back and forth. I mean, boring to yourself. I mean,
becomes something you have to schedule.
Right. Yeah, because the other person's coming over, so you got to plug in the mixer.
Well, that's one of the other good things about Succotash is I don't talk all that much on the episode because I'm playing other clips.
All right.
You know, so we have some phony commercials. We play the Henderson's Pants commercials that we have.
Wait a minute, it's phony? I was going to ask you, since we're free of right now of a sponsor on the show, I was going to let you do a commercial plug for your sponsor, and now I find out it's phony.
Well, the Henderson's Pants people will be happy to become sponsors of Chill Pack.
Really?
while we were.
What are some of the pants that?
Well, in fact, some of our loyal listeners have begun suggesting lines of pants, and the last episode, our two commercials were actually from listener suggested ideas for Henderson's pet pants.
Oh, that's good for all your pet needs.
For your pets, because it turns out the Henderson's pants people are pedophiles.
Zing Bing.
Sorry, and
did I submit that?
And then the Henderson's fancy pants for fops was another
fancy
one.
Pants for fops, because you know fops don't get enough clothes.
Exactly.
These days.
Exactly.
They're all fop pants.
So it's a question of, you know, who's going to come out with how's the podcast world going to evolve?
Right.
And let's talk about this. How is it going to evolve vis-a-vis comedy? I mean, we've talked before, and Dean's talked a lot about how YouTube altered the stand-up realm.
Right.
And, of course, we're seeing kind of Twitter be really interesting in terms of stand-up as a way
and
to...
And comedy writing. You know,
comedy writing, yeah. Absolutely.
Yeah, absolutely.
How that's evolved to 140 characters. Brevity.
What role does podcasting play in stand-up, and how will that evolve as well?
Well, I think in one way it allows people to get their material out there. In some cases, to try it.
Right.
In some cases, to copyright it. I mean, Will Durst who's a very popular political comic, does a feature for my show called A Burst of Durst.
Ah, excellent.
And it's a 2-minute piece, and he does it. He actually records it for like 10 different radio stations, and then he puts a little custom thing at the end of the one for mine. It says, that, you know, this is for Will, for Succotash, it's Will Durst. But for him, and he used to do this as a newspaper column for a comedy paper I wrote for, is it's a way for him to copyright his material.
Because
once it plays on the air,
you got proof.
It's his.
Yes, you got the time and the date. Because that was always the worst thing of doing stand-up, particularly in Canada, as the U.S. comics would come through, and then you'd see your material like 2 months later on TV. And then your act, when you came to the U.S. from Canada, it was like, oh, it's funny. What are you watching Carson? Good for you.
Yeah, I used to run a comedy club way back in the early 80s in Seattle.
Yeah, right.
And there was a comic who, when I first got up there, was really popular. He was one of the funniest guys in Seattle until people started playing Seattle from out of town. And it found out that he would go to L.A. on a regular basis, sit at the Improv in the Comedy Store, take people's lines, and then bring them to Seattle where nobody knew
exactly
comics.
Right.
Well, then he was busted.
Yeah.
And he disappeared quick.
And I think now with the podcast, that's a way to just bust that immediately.
Right.
Just go, hey, man, that was my material, and here it is. And here you download it on iTunes, and there's my act.
Yeah, exactly.
In fact, that's why I went into improv in the first place, because I was sick of a lot of my material just showing up in other people's stuff.
Yeah, so, when you do improv, it's you don't care.
You don't care at that point.
You can't even remember you did it. If someone else stole it, you go, hey, that's really funny. Thanks, I got it from you.
Exactly. I didn't even know. Well, glad you enjoyed it.
Yeah, so I think that's the main evolution is going to become if people start actually really actively utilizing podcasts and listening to them. I think the figure I heard was like 5% of the U.S. population has ever downloaded a podcast.
Is that it?
Yeah.
Oh.
So one of the things I'm trying to do with Succotash is just drive listenership, just to have people start downloading these things, not just mine.
What would be the percentage, though, of the population that ever attended a comedy club?
Yeah, that's a good question.
It's a good question, but I think probably more than download podcasts.
I would think it's more than 5% of the people have attended a comedy club in their lifetime. But regular comedy attendance, that's the other thing. Some people go once, you know, because I've had people go, oh, you're a comedian? Yeah, I went to Club Woods. It wasn't funny. I hate comedy, basically.
And maybe part of it is how does listening to podcasts and accessing podcasts become more effortless for people? Because listening to the radio is flipping a dial on and then finding the station you like.
Right.
So is there a way to have a continuous offering of podcasts that's easy for people to access?
And
I don't know what the answer to that
Which
is.
Which is why, I mean, I think these aggregates, these networks, such as Jackalope Radio. Where you can find your Chill Pack Hollywood Hour, I think, twice a week.
Yes.
Fridays and Sundays. And also Talk Superstation.
Our Talk Superstation.
TalkSuperstation.com, where you can find your Chill Pack Hollywood Hour.
Earwolf.com is an aggregate here in Los Angeles that does a lot of comedy podcasts.
Oh, yeah.
Aggregation. They do Comedy Bang Bang. They do the Apple Sisters. They have probably a dozen comedy shows.
Oh, wow.
And that's a place you can go and find new stuff.
Look at that.
So I'll go there periodically, see what new is specifically comedy to play a new clip from something that's, you know, not been on our show before.
So that's your handy farm team then? That's,
oh, yeah.
Because I would think so much research is involved in listening to all these things and finding new ones and how.
Yeah. In fact, one of the benefits of actually driving to L.A. from San Francisco to get down here this weekend for the different things I'm doing, including this interview, it gave me a chance to listen to a whole bunch of new podcasts I had not had a chance to listen to. So I just you know, get them on my iPhone, I plug in and just listen to it all the way down.
Are there any good magazines about podcasting, about podcasts?
Not strictly about podcasts. There's a couple of good websites. One is ploplist.com.
Ploplist.
Ploplit. The wow. ploplist.com. And they actually talk about comedy podcasts on there.
Uh-huh.
And then what was Punchline magazines now become Laugh Spin. They changed their name. And
legal reasons?
No, I think they felt they did more than just comedy. Laugh Spin allowed them to talk about podcasting and other things. And so they talk a lot about podcasting. It's not strictly a podcasting publication.
Right.
But that's a place you can go and find out. That's where they started talking about Succotash, like out of the box for us.
Wow.
Our first week we were out, they started talking to us. Wow.
That's nice. Got to love that.
Now, speaking of Punchline, when I used to go to Punchline in
San Francisco,
sure. Of course, you were affiliated with the club.
I actually used to help book the acts into the Punchline in San Francisco.
And you've had affiliations with so many different comedy clubs.
Yeah, Rooster Teeth Feathers in Sunnyvale.
Is that still there?
Yeah, still there, doing great.
And am I wrong in thinking you in Seattle as well?
Comedy Underground in Seattle. I was actually the general manager there for a couple of years, as well as booking it out of San Francisco.
That's where we first met, or did you come up to Punchlines in Vancouver?
No, I don't think so. I think it must have been. I'm trying to think. It probably would have been the comedy. No, I don't.
Another ground, or then was it San Francisco?
It would have been San Francisco,
right?
Yeah,
those are the days.
And so, how did that evolve? I mean, how did you become involved in that way?
I was actually working at a radio station in San Francisco and became a big fan of it still is the San Francisco International Stand-Up Comedy Competition.
Oh, sure. That's right.
And I became friends with the producers, and I was actually the first official timer and scorekeeper. After the first couple of years of them doing the thing, it was kind of catch as catch can. They'd kind of go, oh, it's 5 minutes, quick, tell the guy his time's up.
Yeah, right.
We developed a lighting system so people knew when their 5 minutes was up, and they had 2 minute warning before that happened.
Awesome.
And I would aggregate all the judges' scores. After I did that for a couple of years and then started living in Seattle to run the comedy club, because it was run by the same folks, they hired an accountant. So it became kind of a Price Waterhouse thing, so to give it even a little bit more kind of cachet
official
and authenticity. Because there was a lot of talk that, oh, the producers are engineering who's winning this thing.
Right, right.
Which wasn't true, but they said, well, let's try and abolish these rumors.
Yeah.
There was
and
a win.
Also, those comics went on to do very well.
Oh, Robin Williams came in second in the one he was in. Dana Carvey's won two of them.
Is that right?
That way back in the day.
There was a winner in San Francisco who just blew me away. So funny. I mean, but right up my alley. But he always did his performances in a white dinner jacket, always had a martini.
Dexter Madison.
And
Dexter Madison.
Is that who it was?
Well,
a Noel Coward.
Yeah, but it was a character
that he was playing.
And it was
Is Dexter Madison his real name?
No. No, and
because I could never then find whatever happened.
Well, I'll tell you.
Here's the story.
His name was Joe Napote, and he got throat cancer, and had to have his voice box removed.
Wow!
And
was he smoking and martinis? Was he doing that as his character thing?
He was. I don't know how much smoking had to do with what happened or anything else. So he's unable to perform.
Wow!
Yeah. And he just turned to doing comedy writing because he was no longer had a voice.
You could still
because
type.
I just thought that was about to just blow up nationally.
Oh yeah, no, it was a great character. I remember because I was working the competition when he was on stage.
Was there any comics you saw at that competition that you thought would have made it really big and you never heard from again, or just stopped doing it?
That's a good question. There are a lot of comics who got in it who did terribly because they just
it's too much pressure.
It's not their thing.
Yeah,
and you know, Paula Poundstone did terrible in the comedy competition.
Oh yeah, because she's a slow talker.
Yeah, it's a conversational kind of thing. You know, long bits. There was I don't know if you guys saw the online little memorial I wrote to a guy named Richard Carter.
No.
Richard Carter was a guy, and I was, the year he was in it, I think it was 89, I was actually helping the audition process because one of the producers was out having a baby. Uh-huh. And so I was in charge of going to the Punchline and watching the auditions. And this guy comes in, he's 68 years old. And he's got one of his buttons is off on his sweater, so it's misbuttoned. And he seems kind of out of it. And he goes, are these where the auditions are? We go, yeah. Well, I signed up by phone. Okay, well, go ahead and do your time. He kind of totters up on stage. And the entire tottering thing is a complete act.
Ah.
So he was already doing his set the moment he hit the
And
the
he room. Was, he. I mean, he all of his material was based on being kind of completely... misunderstood as a senior citizen. And he just blew the room away.
Wow.
And I invited him to the competition. The producers were pissed. They go, this is for young comics. Why are you letting a 68-year-old man in the competition? I said, because he's been doing stand-up for 2 years. He is a young comic. And he ended up, the way the competition worked at the time, we had 40 competitors. There were 2 weeks of preliminaries. Five of the people from each week would go into the semifinals.
Right.
He came in sixth for his week. So he just barely missed... semifinals, but doing that, he lived in Salt Lake City, but doing that competition gave him the confidence he needed. He moved to San Francisco, started working the circuit, got on the Tonight Show in 1993.
No way.
Wow.
And worked for years. And he just in July passed away at the age of 91.
Wow. That's a great story.
Yeah. So that was
see,
great.
There's always hope.
Everyone gets a second act.
Yes.
That's right. Is the competition
Men,
still
anyway.
Going on?
Men get a second act.
It's going right. I think it starts in mid-September.
Well, next time in San Francisco.
That's right.
Look. Wow.
Well, I want to ask you real quick. How much time do we have
left? 5 minutes left.
Okay. You know, I had sent you a clip of a picture of myself and socks.
Yes.
That I had knitted.
And I'm using both
comedy
of them.
Comedy socks.
they all work together as a set, and I don't want to get into details.
I turned you onto a podcast. I turned you into a podcast called What Duvet Said.
Yes.
And you had Duvet.
I had one of the duvets on. Yes, I did. Rob Celli was my guest co-host in episode 8.
And is it true that he was upset about having his
identity busted?
Identity busted. Yeah. Is that true or is that just a gag?
No, he made a big thing about it. He talked about it on his blog, on his podcast. It was we had a great time. He was happy about it.
And what's this item for all those who don't know?
What Duvet said, they actually were inspired by you guys.
What?
Yes.
We are leading the way in the podcast world as podcast royalty.
he and Jason Duplessis, the other half of Bob Duvet, they talk about pop culture things, television, music, things like that. And it's a conversation. It's a lot along the way you guys are. They just have a different focus for what their show's about.
There is this hilarious thing that they do, you know, of like station IDs where you'll have celebrities say, you know, I'm Jerry Lewis, and when I'm in Los Angeles, I listen to your Chilpack Hollywood Hour. So they do this thing where they have cut together all these celebrities just saying their name.
Their own name.
Their own name. I'm Martin Short.
Yes.
I'm Tommy Lasorda. Yeah. I'm da da da. And then they have one person at the very end who they know deliver the, and you're listening to
What Duvet Said.
Yeah.
It's hilarious. It's genius.
It really is.
It's funny.
I'm sorry we didn't get a chance to talk about my movie career.
What?
This whole time we've been here, and you guys are the Chilpack Hollywood guys. We never got a chance to even talk about my movies.
Let's talk about it in 3 minutes.
Isn't that weird?
Go.
What movies?
That I wrote for the Hallmark Channel.
Oh yes.
I just bought a Hallmark movie on DVD, a Moonlight and Mistletoe. You didn't write that one, did you?
I didn't write that, but I did do a Christmas movie called Santa Junior.
And I have that on DVD.
There you go.
You gave it to me.
That's right.
And we played it. I love that one.
That's right. So
Santa
Junior
with
Judd
Nelson.
Which ones will you get residuals for if people go out and buy?
All three of them. They're all on DVD.
So Santa Junior.
Santa Junior, Monster Makers, which is a Halloween movie.
Uh-huh.
And
see that one?
Wedding Days, which is a wedding comedy.
Is that the one where she comes to the small town and she's a wedding planner?
No, this is with John Larroquette and Karen Valentine as the parents of three girls who all get married at the same time.
So did you find it rewarding to write for Hallmark?
Yes, it was.
Really?
It was. The Ultimate Movies did not come out quite as well as they could have because of the editing process. Oh, it's all who was in control of the final edit.
Oh, I see. You don't have Final Cut as a writer?
Oh, as a writer. As a writer. Right.
You're not even allowed to the set. Well, what are you talking about?
And I'll say this. That was the rewarding thing. I was allowed to the set every day of production and pre-production, and I was in the editing room.
Oh.
And for a writer, that is gold.
Yeah.
I had a huge crush on Karen Valentine most of my life.
As did I, Room 222.
Oh. Remember that?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And she was delighted to get the work. She had not done anything on camera for 20 years. She'd been doing theater in Connecticut.
No.
Yes.
That is wild. Well, look at that.
So Halloween's coming up. People should check out Monster Makers. Then Christmas is coming out, so they should check out Santa Jr. And, of course, Halloween is coming up, so they should check out Wedding...
Wedding Days.
Wedding Days. Yes. Yeah.
Halloween's coming up twice. I see what
you said. You see what I did there?
I did.
That clip of what I just did may very well be on radio in the UK.
Or on
Succotash. As he reviews exactly how dinky the show is actually put together.
So again, people can find your writing, find your blogs at...
Huffington Post.
Sure. Also, what about... Do you want to plug Daily Grill?
Sure, thedailygrill.com.
Yes.
It's the-daily-grill.com. You know how that works.
Sure do.
I don't, actually.
I'm still waiting for the Daily Grill restaurant people to come after me.
Exactly.
So far, they haven't.
And, of course, people can find Succotash Show at succotashshow.com.
Right.
And on
also
iTunes.
Also, subscribe on iTunes. The Return of Dana Carvey is up now, probably.
Should be up in the next week, along with Scott Carvey, our music director, who happens to be his brother.
Right.
Look at that.
Both in studio at the same time.
Theme song?
He did the theme song.
It's a catchy theme song.
It is.
And we can follow you on Twitter?
Absolutely. At Succotash Show. Or at Hershko, H-E-R-S-H-C-O.
Look at that.
Right.
Follow
on.
Follow me at D. Haglin.
I'm Phil Larenas. You can find every installment of this, your Chilpack Hollywood Hour, at chilpackhollywood.com, chilpackhollywood.com.
Yep.
You can also subscribe via iTunes.
Please do.
Become a liker
like us.
Of the show, facebook.com/ChillPack Hollywood.
Yes, you forgot.
And one thing that I'll mention on Mark's behalf. It is very important if you enjoy a show, be it your ChillPack Hollywood Hour, or in this case, Succotash Show, rate it
and maybe even write
a little review at iTunes.
Really
That's
does
delightful.
Help.
Yeah.
That
really
is very helpful. So if you do like any show, let people know by sharing that rating.
That's it. I'm going to put on my socks.
I'm going to as well. Until next week, I'm Phil Larenas. Thanks, Mark.
Thanks, guys.
See ya.